Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area here in central Iowa. Your hosts for today will be Susan Franson and Gina McAndrews. It looks like there's some breaking news for today. What is it?
As Leanne Harder announced a couple of weeks ago, the Story County Supervisors held a special meeting last night, June 23rd, at 6 p.m., to consider an application for a proposed confined animal feeding operation, CAFO, sited north of Maxwell in Indian Creek Township.
The applicant, Maxwell Farms LLC, is proposing to construct a CAFO that would hold roughly 4,960 hogs. According to the application, the structure will be used for stockpiling and composting activities, and the dead animals will be placed within the composter within 24 hours after death.
The applicant, Maxwell Farms LLC, is proposing to construct 4,960 hogs. According to the application, the structure will be used for stockpiling and composting activities, and the dead animals would be placed within the composter within 24 hours after death. So, Gina, what do you think of that?
Well, it sure can be challenging for folks that either support or don't support the CAFOs. The approval process is pretty challenging. The Board of Supervisors can make a recommendation to the Iowa Department of Natural Resources for approval or denial of the permit, but the ultimate decision then lies with the DNR. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, water quality and how the environment will be impacted. The real challenges for the applicants is they have to fill out something called the master matrix, which in some folks' opinion leans towards, you know, approving CAFOs. If they pass the master matrix, the supervisors are required to recommend in favor of the CAFO. And in the case of Maxwell Farms LLC, they passed by only 1 point, but the supervisors couldn't legally deny them the permit.
That's right, but it's not exactly the way it happened. We have Kim Stevens here with us. Hi, Kim.
Good morning.
She was at the meeting last night, one of 73 people who made comments, one of 71 who opposed it. Why did you oppose it?
Well, there are several reasons. The first being, they lower the property values of the homes around the CAFOs is what really drives neighbors to speak up about it. On top of it, it increases risks of lung disease of children who live within 2 miles of the property. It pollutes our waterways. West Indian Creek is already a impaired waterway, and adding the CAFO and the additional fields that need to have manure spread on it will only increase the likelihood of having a greater impaired waterway. And of course, they give off a stench. Not very long ago, about a quarter mile from my house, they laid down manure on the field, and the stench was so strong that my kids were gagging while they were waiting for the bus. So it really hurts quality of life for people who live around CAFOs.
I'm glad you used that word, because when you say it lowers property values, it makes it sound like, oh, well, my house won't sell for as much. But it's really that I have been told that it's almost unlivable during, particularly when they have the manure spread, which isn't always knifed in the way it's supposed to be.
And right.
Well, thank you. That's a good summary. Also, I think that to say that it's challenging for the applicants is a little misleading, because the matrix is entirely slanted toward the interests of the applicants. They get to pick which of the questions they're asked. They only have to ask to answer yes or okay to half of them. And so it's a very low bar. I don't think anybody who applies has ever failed to pass the matrix, but this one came pretty close. It was just one or two points. out of like 150. So what was your impression of the meeting?
I thought it went really well. I was happy to see that we had so many people attend. I know it's hard to get people motivated to show up to a Zoom meeting. It's very easy to forget to sign in. So we really did a lot of work to remind people to send in their comments to the board and also to show up to the Zoom meeting. Almost everyone was against it. And I think Story County again and again has come back and said, we don't want this in our county. So I was happy that that the board reaffirmed the vote that they took back in 2019 for a resolution that went to the governor about a moratorium on hog confinements.
Yeah, I know it really is challenging for counties to oppose those CAFOs, as they're mm-hmm. often approved all over. But yeah. often I know in real estate, I know when people are looking for houses, a common question is, are there any CAFOs going to be planned, or are there any around in the surrounding areas when people are moving out in the country? And it's interesting how people that put up the CAFOs often don't want to live there.
Right.
But they don't mind everybody else having the smell down the road. Did you grow up on a farm? Are you familiar with hogs and farming? And
not at all. In fact, I grew up outside Detroit. So for me, up until CAFOs wanted to move into my neighborhood, food came from the grocery store. And that's as much as I knew about it. And then I started learning about it. My husband grew up on a farm. And when I first was talking to him about it, his dad had raised pigs when he was a kid. And, you know, at first he was like, oh, it's not a big deal. And then he started looking into it. And he was like, this is not what pig farming used to be. Just the amount of waste alone is more than Iowa can really bear.
Yeah, it seems to be a fairly common, once people start really looking into it and what it is and what it causes and the impacts on the environment, I mean, as kind of demonstrated there by the meeting, there's 73 opposed it, or 71 opposed it out of the 73 attendees. Mm-hmm. What were some of the other reasons that the people gave?
Another one was looking at COVID. Right now, I read in the New York Times something like 600,000 hogs have been euthanized because there's such a backlog. So not only is it a bad time economically to put up the new hog barn, but also last year the state fair didn't have pigs because of the African swine fever. So that's still a threat to our hog herd. And additionally, you know, it's cruel to animals when they do euthanize them. A lot of times they just turn off the ventilation and basically the pigs cook. So that was a comment that came up again and again. Trying to think of other arguments. Kind of the brief overview I gave sort of talked about a lot of different things people talked about, but mostly people just don't want them in their backyard. So.
Do you think people just don't want them in their backyard or don't want them at all?
I mean, it's not, the hog confinement's not going to go in my backyard. So I don't want them at all. I'd like to see us eventually transition to a more sustainable farming system. However, I think people do get involved when they are in their backyard, because then they're forced to think about them.
You said you were
because Detroit. I think probably the majority of people are kind of like you said, you were, you know, before this was coming in your backyard, you know, they just go to the grocery store and get their food and they're not really thinking about where it comes from, how it's grown, you know, who's paying the farmers and how they're paying their mortgages and that sort of thing.
Right.
What were the two people that were supporting it? What were their comments?
They mostly spoke to the Maxwell family being a good family and that they've never had any problems before. They have another CAFO in that area. You know, I
Well, one of the things that you talked about when I asked you to come on was Robeson Woods. And I think you've also been out there, Gina.
Yeah.
So why don't you talk about how this will affect Robeson Woods?
Robeson Woods is pretty close to my house. So that's an area where I take my kids somewhat regularly to walk around. We have timber on our own property. So when we get bored of walking around our own timber, we go out there. There's a pond. There's a campsite. I know people go out there to hunt mushrooms and hunt wildflowers. There's lots of stuff to do on the property. I believe in looking at the master matrix, there's some fields just north of Robeson Acres where the manure will be placed. So be kind of sandwiched in with the confinement south of it, about a half mile, and then the fields north of it. And during those times, I don't see how the park will be usable. When the smell is that great, people don't want to be out there. So I can see that it would become a place that people don't think about going.
So what did your husband have to say? What was really what turned him off as far as he grew up with hogs and raising them? And what was his big opinions of the issues with it?
Mostly just the amount of manure. I mean, obviously raising hogs, they did spread the manure on their field. But when you have 100 hogs, the manure doesn't sit in a pit. It sits outside, which makes a difference in terms of the kind of bacteria that grows. Yes, it smells. However, it's just not as much. It's not running into the waterways.
Not as concentrated.
Right. Yeah. And so after he started thinking about that, then he started looking at the drainage districts and noticed in particular with the new ones that were added in Nevada, several of them had open ditches that ran from the fields where they're placing the manure directly into town. Into Harrington Park, right near the middle and high school. I think that's what really got him fired up about it.
With your newfound knowledge, are you planning on taking a more active role in buying pork from more sustainable type farmers?
Yeah, we have been buying half a hog. The last pig that we bought was from some friends of ours who just, you know, raised them to try it out. We do have pig buildings on our property and hopefully we'll start raising our own. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Are your kids going to get in 4-H or anything?
You know, my husband talks about that sometimes. However, I'm a city girl. So I don't know much about 4-H. There wasn't 4-H or FFA at my high school. So my husband's going to have to take over that.
It's not too hard. How old are your kids?
They're 12, 8, and 5.
Oh, they'd be perfect.
All boys.
Ages. Perfect ages. They could have goats and chickens and pigs. Oh. And...
yeah, I know they would love that.
So how did you end up in Iowa from Detroit?
My husband and I were both in the military, and that's how we met. And he grew up here in Nevada. So after he retired, we moved back to the family farm.
So are there other issues in food production that have come to your attention as far as becoming more active?
Overall, actually, I've applied and been accepted to Drake Law School. I'd like to become an environmental lawyer to help look at the broader issues about the environment.
What would you like to focus on with that?
Mostly clean water. That's a huge thing. It doesn't just impact Iowa. You know, all of our waterways flow into the Mississippi, and there's a huge dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. So, you know, what we're doing here impacts shrimp fishermen down in Louisiana.
Right. And there's actually a big effort to grow shrimp in Iowa.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There's a Kimley Co-op, I think it's called, but they're doing research on how to grow shrimp in buildings in Iowa, but reusing the water. So it would use a type of algae. The fish would eat the food, and then the algae would consume the poop and clean the water at the same time. And so they had very little waste and runoff. It sounds like a really interesting project.
Yeah.
Well, actually, maybe this is the time to get onto the what I thought was the most dramatic part of the meeting last night was the vote, and I was surprised. I don't know whether other people were surprised. I was surprised at the not only the passion of the supervisors, but the different things that they stressed. Loris really stressed the animal cruelty and, you know, that aspect of what was happening. And Lisa Heddens talked about the health issues. And Linda's was a new topic, but they were so strong in their opposition. There was no question how they were going to vote. But it was, I thought, dramatic, because I remember the vote 2 years ago, and the one where I mentioned where people were sitting on the floor and everything. That was when Sanders was still on the council. And he said, well, we have no choice. It's the law. You know, we can't break the law. We have to vote for it. And this time there wasn't any mention of that law. They just said, we're opposed to it. We're opposed to this. And also something that you said, Kim, as you said, you grew up outside Detroit. Well, I'm sure you grew up in a nice neighborhood. But one of the things that's been coming up in the Black Lives Matter movement is how many times poor people, in this case, who mostly were black, live in neighborhoods that are polluted, really badly polluted with industrial pollution.
Yes.
And it sounds to me like, well, that's happening here too. And you don't have to be poor. You just have to be in the wrong part of the county to get dangerous.
Environmental justice is racial justice. So
it's an issue that's even bigger than that right now in here in Iowa. Now, Mike, could you play the clip from Brenda Brink? Because she brings up something else. I saw Brenda Brink mentioned in the Ames Tribune as being in opposition of the Maxwell Farms proposal for a new CAFO. And what were your objections, Brenda?
I'm a person who believes that we need to support our small family farms, and I don't think that the industrial model of what we call factory farms is good for anything. It's not good for our communities. It's not good for the people who get involved in them. And then right now in the pandemic, they can't even get rid of the hogs that they're raising. So they're having to euthanize them, they call it. It's just simply killing them. They either shoot them or gas them right there on site. So why are we adding another facility right here in Story County when there's just this very recent history and barns aren't even being populated with hogs for that same reason of lack of market? I have concerns also because I think they're very poor for the community. Most of these factory farms are associated in what we call a vertically integrated system, and most of the profits go to China or in some cases to Brazil, where those headquarters are. They don't help the local community. And we know that farmers are on the verge of bankruptcy in too many instances anyway. So the whole system is just not going the right direction for our agriculture.
In your understanding, what was the reason this facility in this? Is there anything else that you'd like to say?
I think that public pressure is something that people need to keep in mind is an important determining factor with the denying or the approving of a facility. In Story County, the Board of Supervisors passed a resolution to say that they thought that the governor should start looking into some way to put a moratorium or a pause on future factory farms in Iowa so that we can take a look at what kind of environmental hazards there are, take a look at how they're being approved and cited, and to make sure that we're doing the right thing for people.
In case you just tuned in, this is KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames. Your hosts for today have been Gina McAndrews and Susan Franzen.
You just heard from Kim Stevens and Brenda Brink expressing some of the opposition that was presented to the Story County Board of Supervisors at their special meeting last night at 6 o'clock on Zoom. There were 71 voices of the opposed to the application by Maxwell Farms LLC for a new CAFO in Indian Creek Township near Robinson Acres. KHOI reported on the special meeting of the Story County Board of Supervisors, which ended with all of the supervisors voting to deny approval.
For the balance of the program, we'll talk about a couple of examples about how COVID-19 has affected traditional values, graduation ceremonies, and sports.
We've been following the various non-traditional graduation ceremonies. Ballard had an outdoor graduation in the parking lot. Several other towns have had a parade of seniors being driven down through the town in celebration.
You just heard the most traditional music associated with graduations, pomp, and circumstance. We felt that the best way to introduce our segment on high school graduations was with that traditional music. But because of COVID-19, this year's graduation ceremonies in central Iowa were anything but traditional. With the restrictions of social distancing and the dangers of having ceremonies indoors, there were many unusual adaptations for the class of 2020. But the principal of Gilbert High School, Vic Vanderpool, is here to tell us about what we think was the most unusual of all.
We were looking for one of the celebrations to feature. Ballard was very excited about theirs in their parking lot, and there were some that were basically just the seniors driving down the main street with people cheering them. But what did you do in Gilbert that was so unusual?
Well, we also did a graduation ceremony that was a drive-in style. So if you picture what a drive-in theater would have been like, is all of our cars were kind of laid out in a grid pattern in our parking lot facing toward a stage that was set up near our football stadium. Our goal was really to try to create a ceremony that was going to still incorporate all of the great traditions of graduation, because that's such a important moment in culminating students' careers in education at the high school level. So we tried to incorporate everything into those traditions while also trying to keep a good, safe environment that didn't put people at risk of getting sick.
So the way I found out about your solution to that problem was because Ursula Rudenberg said that you had originally approached KHOI, or we were talking with you about possibly broadcasting your graduation. How did that go?
As soon as they started closing schools around spring break time, it started getting kind of serious about what we could do. And our goal was try to do something that maintained that special moment while also including everyone. We were really worried that if we pushed graduation back to June or back to July, or even some schools are doing the beginning of August, that you start losing seniors that go away for the military, that are going away for internships in college. And I was just worried that if things did spike with COVID, that it would just really limit what our options are. And I really didn't want to have to send diplomas in the mail or just, you know, have kids come up and pick them up. I wanted to try to keep that special moment. So I'd reached out to a few local radio stations trying to figure out originally, could we just do a radio broadcast? And then it kind of just started building from there. We found out about a production company that could do some live streaming. So, you know, because we could only have a certain number of people in our parking lot, we wanted to be able to have everybody watch the moment and see their family member walk across the stage. And so we started working with this production company out of Des Moines that actually does concerts, rock and roll concerts and music concerts and things. And because all of those are shut down, they moved into production of these types of events, which it was just kind of a lucky set of circumstances that it all worked out the way it did.
So what did the video consist of?
Well, the video, because it was being live streamed, it gave everybody the opportunity that was not there to engage in that special moment. And I think at the time we had over 500 viewers at the time watching, and we've had 2,000 views since then. And so not only did it give people the opportunity to see the special event, it also gave them the opportunity to have a video of the event. So traditionally, we don't live stream our graduations because we can have unlimited guests there. So it really provided us the opportunity to have people experience it that wouldn't have been able to. So grandma and grandpa that couldn't leave maybe due to COVID concerns or, you know, because we limited just to family members that could fit inside of cars, it really was going to leave out a big swath of family members. So we just wanted to try to make that live stream a portion that they can participate in. And the original discussion with the radio station was we thought that we could just do a radio broadcast, but it ended up that the company we worked with was also able to do a radio broadcast into the cars, which is similar to the drive-in style.
Oh, well, that's something that you couldn't see on the video, that the people were getting it in the cars at the same time.
Yes, yeah, they just tuned into a radio station that was based on the FM frequency that was the speakers were set to. So they were sitting in their car listening to the graduation ceremony on their speakers. But we also had external speakers set up around the parking lot so they could hear. And the weather was beautiful, so people had their windows open and could really hear the sound and things.
Well, and of course, the other advantage of a live stream is that you can listen to it later. So I got to watch your graduation in preparation for our program. And what struck me was it was a windy day. Fortunately, you said in the morning it had actually been raining. Is that right?
Yeah, the storm was like 70% chance of rain all day. Like it looked really miserable. And we were planning on moving forward, even if it rained, because people were inside of cars. And the people that were running the ceremony, myself and several other people, were actually on a stage that was covered. So we could have accommodated rain even. But what ended up happening is the sun came out and then the wind picked up. So people were losing their tassels and their hats were blowing off and their, you know, different things were, funny little things were happening. But if that's the worst of it, that's not so bad. We still were able to, if you watch the video, it's create a pretty special moment for our seniors and their families.
Oh, yes. And some of them had real senses of humor. I mean, they were allowed to decorate their hats, which I understood was a big thing in Ballard, that the students were very pleased that they got to decorate their hats. You couldn't see a lot of them. But pretty much everybody, you know, as they turned around, you could see whether their hat was decorated. I remember one looked like was green with a border on, looked like a slate. And some of them had sparkles and some of them just gave up trying to wear them in the wind. They just took them off. It was fun to watch.
And it was nice that they can keep them, you know, keep that video for show their kids 10 or 20 years from now, or their grandparents that might be unable to come.
Well, yeah, and the interesting part about it was, you know, Gilbert's not had an outdoor ceremony, so outdoor ceremonies are cool. You know, the weather's nice. If the weather's decent, it becomes a really fun experience for them. And the best part about it, and you really couldn't see this from the video because it's focused on the stage and the graduates, but the cars were decorated as well. So a lot of the families decorated their cars. And the really cool thing about it is because the way they received their diplomas, they would drop their graduate off and then they would pull up. So they were only sitting about 10 feet away from the stage when their graduate walked across the stage. So for me, it was really neat because you could see the parents' faces and the joy in their faces and how excited they were to see their son or daughter walk across the stage. And normally when you look out, you just see a sea of faces in a gym and you really don't get a connect with the family. So it was a pretty special moment.
Yeah,
well, so then they can pull right up and take pictures. And I noticed there was some like posing, and that's what I thought they were probably doing.
Yeah, because the graduate would drive up in the car. They were in the passenger seat and get out because we had to maintain social distancing and the number of people outside of their vehicles and things. And so when they got out, the graduate really was the only one out besides a few of us on the stage that were there handing out diplomas and things. And the graduate would come up and then their car would pull forward with the graduate out of the car now. And so then then they would walk up and get their diploma and then turn and get some pictures taken for their family on the stage, which was pretty cool because usually families would not get that great of a seat. So, you know, they'd be just wherever they got lucky to sit at the day of graduation. But yeah, they would take some pictures for their family and then, you know, proceed off the stage over to a photo tent. We did like a more of a traditional graduation photo in a little photo tent to the left of the stage. And then they would pick up their graduate and drive back to the parking lot. So We just proceeded through all of our graduates that way.
And then you did a parade through town?
Yeah, we ended up doing that. That's not something that's been a tradition for us. There's been some things going on recently with teacher parades. I don't know if you guys have followed that or not, but where families have been able to come out and wave to teachers and things. And then we got to start to talking about it because we limited attendance. Would it be kind of fun just to do a little graduate parade? And so we sent out information in advance to our community and to make sure that they could come line the streets. And actually people had said that was one of the best parts of graduation is this parade and how the community turned out and everyone was kind of spread out all over town cheering for them. And I got a feeling that that's going to be a new tradition I'm not going to be able to get rid of now. So, but it was a special day for our seniors for sure.
Well, I was struck by the COVID-19 way of getting the diploma. It was, you know, usually the person, whether it's the principal or whoever in a university, they, you know, they hand the diploma and shake the hand. Well, of course, they didn't do that. These diplomas were in Ziploc bags on a table. So, I mean, one, you know, there was one diploma to pick up and then somebody put the next one out. So it was very safe way to get your diploma, right?
Yes, we tried to take all those things into consideration. And the worst part about it is that with COVID is that that loss of human connection, like that's a big moment. Like we shake hands, we give hugs. That's what we do at graduations. Like that's a big part of that, you know, and they come on the stage, the superintendent shakes the students' hands, we give them hugs. And so all of those things kind of went away, which was the unfortunate part of that. But we still wanted to try to maintain wearing gloves when we handed it, you know, put the diplomas. We had them all prearranged in Ziploc bags and we set them on a little pedestal so they would walk across the stage and pick up their diploma inside the Ziploc bag and then walk off the stage to try to maintain as safe of an environment as possible.
So you said that you're probably going to continue with the parade even in future years. Is there going to be any pressure to ever video it again?
Well, I'm sure it would. And that's something you definitely want to always consider, you know, is the more accessible you make your events, the better. You know, you always want to be careful with the technology portion because that always can sometimes be tricky. And that was the thing that worried us the most is the weather and then the technology. Is the technology going to work the day of the event? Because if it doesn't, you know, that creates a little bit of a nightmare. You know, you don't have sound, you don't have some of those things that you're promising families. It makes it a little more tricky, but yeah, if you can live stream events, it's always a great thing. I know they've started live streaming baseball and softball games this summer because of restrictions on, you know, people that can attend events and things. And we broadcast other sporting events. So it's not a huge leap to also live stream a graduation.
Yeah, I guess it's also something of an expense, isn't it?
Oh, yes. I mean, traditionally, our graduation costs us almost nothing. I mean, we do it in our own gym with our own people and our own equipment, and there's no expense virtually to graduation besides a few logistical things. Our school board and our superintendent were very supportive of us doing some out-of-the-box thinking. They were not interested in moving things to June and July due to the concerns that I had about losing students and, you know, if things get worse with COVID, then just not being able to have events at all. And so they were really willing to, you know, look at some out of the box options, which of course come with expense. But thank goodness our board was very supportive. They have some funds that were able to support the event.
How many graduates did you have this year?
Right around 120. I think it was 117, 118, which is, you know, a normal size class for us. We have a couple classes coming that are about 145. So we're definitely growing. So, you know, and it did take a little longer, you know, because you were moving cars instead of just walking people across. And so, but I think people were really patient. But, you know, understand that a lot of the things that we tried to keep in the ceremony we had to scale back on. So usually, like, we would play two songs from the band and two songs from the choir, you know, and because all of that had to be pre-recorded because we couldn't have a, you know, a band and a choir actually out there performing. So we actually cut back on some time in a few different areas. But yeah, about 117 graduates this year.
And you had the music all the way through. And I wanted to play some of that music for our radio program to give people a little sense of the experience. And the closing song I thought was a fun song, but I couldn't believe that the school board had approved it. I wondered if the students had. You said it was, how was the music selected?
Well, the production company before the event was playing music, just to have music playing while people were kind of lining up and getting organized. And we had selected music for the ceremony that was a piece from our band and our piece from our choir that was pre-recorded for contests that they used. So the music was actually played by our seniors, which was nice. So we had a piece from our concert band and a piece from our concert choir. And then the production company was just picking random music. So it wasn't nothing that I approved of. I hadn't even watched the video all the way to the end to hear the music at the end. It'd be a little disappointing, you know, that they played something that, you know, celebrated alcohol or drinking, things that obviously we wouldn't support or endorse. But they were just picking random music to while people were cleaning up and kind of, you know, lining up for the parade.
Oh, and of course, if you didn't know this song, which is I Love My Country, you'd think it was a patriotic song. But can you put on I Love My Country as a farewell to the Gilbert graduation and also maybe as a transition to trying to get our next guest on the line? So I want to thank you now at this moment in our program and our technology when we can still talk to you. Thank you so much, Vic, for coming on and telling us about the memorable Gilbert graduation. And I see that Kimberly Stevens is still on, and I didn't get a chance to thank you. There was a little glitch at the time that we transitioned from the very dramatic supervisors meeting to the Gilbert High School graduation. And so we'll just go into I Love My Country.
Yeah, baby. Out here ain't nothing but woods and water. Drop a deer from a stand, catch a fish with a barber, drink a beer out the can, liquor out the bottle, how the good Lord intended it. Yes, he did. I love my country, I love my country. Six strings and fiddles and ski from Kentucky. We keep it funky, we like how it sounds. Monday to Sunday, yeah, I love my country. I'm alive and proud, rolling in the town, hanging out the window like a blue tick hound. Ain't sorry, ain't nothing to be sorry about. Styrofoam plate date night, George Strait singing great swine. We turning up sitting lakeside, that pedal steel she straight sliding. Over here to me she do that Alabama shake like you ain't ever seen. I love my country, I love my country. Six strings and fiddles and ski from Kentucky. We keep it funky, we like how it sounds. Monday to Sunday, yeah, I love my country.
And our last guest is someone we haven't heard from for a while, and it's a big surprise to all of us that Paul Wearson can be with us on his flip phone. Hi, Paul.
I'm very proud of myself because I dialed all the numbers to get through, and it's all new technology to me. Usually when I encounter technology, it's Houston, I have a problem. But I'm very proud today that I got into the conversation.
This is also partly a program about technology. We had this Zoom supervisors meeting, which was very interesting. And we compared it with what it's like when you have hundreds of people jamming into the courthouse. And then we had a live stream graduation, which was a very interesting experience. And now we have, finally, we have you, Paul, back with us.
What do we need to talk about today, Susan? What's going on?
In addition to the technology of actually putting this show on and the events that we were talking about, you had some sports news. We've never done sports news. I know that you have other talents besides being a radio host. Why don't you tell people what you are now that we are opening up, you are able to have baseball games. Is that right?
Right. I'm the PA announcer for the Roland Story baseball team. And we, of course, it has been permitted to have baseball and softball for high school teams. And so we've had three games right now, I believe. And of course, I have to make announcements at the beginning of the game about social distancing. Another interesting thing is that no one can spit. You can't spit, okay? And you have to sanitize, of course, if you wash your hands. It's 6-foot distancing. And then also, little boys have always chased foul balls. Well, under the COVID-19 guidelines, the only people that can touch baseballs are players. So players have to retrieve softballs, get out of play. Other than that, those are the PA announcements I make at the beginning of the game that covers for COVID-19. But I have to say that I feel like a teacher who's not being obeyed because there's not a great deal of social distancing, and I don't think I saw any masks in any of the games. So it's and that's probably true around the state at school, at high school games. And it's possibly the idea that it's an outdoor activity and people feel safe, not wearing masks, and there wasn't a lot of social distancing either. So I found it kind of interesting that the game looked a lot like previous seasons in terms of there are more people spread out in lawn chairs. The people are making an attempt to stay off the bleachers, but it's pretty much baseball as I knew it before, except for those other rules I mentioned. But everyone's happy to have the sport back, I think.
So this is pretty much the first time you've been out socially in
I went through COVID-19 according to Hoyle. Starting in March, I went mainly to the grocery store, and up here in Story City, there might be 3 or 4 patrons when I was in there. And I'd go to the gas station, so I felt fairly immune out here at the farm. And then it gave me a chance to read books I should have been reading and do all the indoor things. Now I can go outdoors and mow the yard and all that sort of thing. And up here at the farm, I don't wear a mask because, of course, I'm alone. Now Sid, my farm cat, does wear a mask. And it might be on the face of it that he's afraid I'll give him the virus. But as a matter of fact, it's one of his political statements. He's very anti-Trump, and so he's wearing a mask in defiance of that. And Sid wears a little leg band that says 9 Lives Matter. Well, this is his protest against the rapid truck traffic on E18. Now, we've lost several cats out there because trucks go by at 60 miles an hour. And of course, they were all closed casket funerals. So Sid is sort of a left-wing activist. He makes all kinds of political statements. In order to turn into the barnyard, I have to turn right. And Sid doesn't even like that. He's a left-wing extremist. So I just sort of have to live with Sid the farm cat, put up with all of his politics and activism. So, but it's fun out here because I can play and I can start to paint now, And so I feel overall, when you had the cold weather, when I stayed indoors, and when you have the nice weather now, I could play at the farm like I always enjoy doing. My career was in Des Moines, but I retired to the farm I grew up on. And so I feel that I've been very fortunate. And also, I'm retired. My income stream hasn't been bothered. But, you know, I volunteer at the schools. I read books and tell stories to the second graders. I teach for retired senior volunteer program, the Speak Up program. I was supposed to be at Colonesco for 8 weeks this spring, and that never happened. Of course, I gave up my volunteer work at the elementary school, and I service a church up in Stratford, Iowa. And that's sort of an elderly population, and they've shut down all this time. And of course, I used to be on KHOI, you know. And now I'm a has-been because I haven't been able to come into the studio. I've been following all your Zoom broadcasts, but most of those activities were taken away, you know. And so that did kind of isolate me. Here I am still alive, okay?
Well, we're glad to have you back. And doing what you do best, which is to tell stories.
Now, Susan, some of your earlier broadcast material brought up to my mind, too, and that is that when we were growing up, we had hogs, and we had small low-rise hog houses out on a two-acre pasture. So our hogs lived a great life, you know. They could walk into the house or go out in the pasture and play, okay? And so when they went to market, it was truly a tragedy because they had a great lifestyle. They could live indoors or outdoors. And I suppose we maybe had 100 to maybe 150 hogs, maybe not even that many. But they had great quality of life. And also with graduations at Rowan Story, the class of 2020 has been treated like genuine celebrities. Additionally, we had all the students ringing the school with their cap and gown with a chair and a sign and with their name on it. And we all drove through and around the school and waved at all the kids, you know. And then there were signs all the way out to the interstate, individual signs with the student's name. And so that was a recognition. And then this Sunday, they're going to have a graduation ceremony. And so we'll see how that goes or what the guidelines are. But actually, the class of 2020 has been recognized in all kinds of unique ways. And I'm going to graduation parties this weekend. So there's an attempt to normalize this, and we'll just see what happens. But I feel bad for them. They had to give up the prom and all the spring activities, and it's been a real sacrifice for them and everybody else. But in small town Iowa, there's been a little more opportunity to social distance. And if you only go to the grocery store and the gas station during the peak of the shutdown, you were comparatively safe from being infected by others. So that's been my experience. And I think that we're all sort of cautiously getting back. There's a lot of political and economic pressure, of course, to restart the economy. And we'll just see how people deal with coming out into that environment again. And I did experiment with going to a restaurant in Ames. And that restaurant was usually crowded. When I went in, there were only two other patrons many feet away from me. So I didn't feel in retrospect that I was taking a great risk there. But, you know, we're all sort of traipsing out carefully and seeing what is going to happen. But I think that particularly with outdoor activities, there might be a false sense of security by the fact that it is outdoors, as I witnessed, you know, watching the crowd at the baseball game. So we'll have to see down the road what sort of resurgence of the illness we have. And, it's all new. It's all uncharted territory. And I think that we'll just see what happens. And hopefully there won't be a bump up in the incidence of the illness until the fall increase that everyone expects. All the epidemiologists are saying there should be another wave of this in the fall. But if we can get through the summer, that would be good.
I'm curious about the graduation parties. Are those outdoors? So how can people social distance enough in a graduation party to be safe?
Well, one of them is a drive-through party, okay? And but the other ones are, and keep in mind that I have known these kids for a long time since I met them in second grade. I have a middle school group at my church, and everyone knows me, you know, and so I go to a lot of graduation parties. Well, that usually means a lot of graduation money. It's a serious impact. Well, I'm dying to see what the norms will be at these parties, you know, and I'm approaching them in a self-protective way, you know, so we'll see what happens when I get there. But it's an attempt by the family to normalize, you know, and so there's a calculated risk involved. I'll be interested to see how much precaution is taken, you know. And I'm in the older, more vulnerable group, okay, so I have to be somewhat self-protective. But I'm curious to see. It'll be this weekend that I go to those parties, so.
What does your mask look like?
My mask was a friend. It's a homemade mask a friend of mine gave me, and it's sort of a polka dot type thing that I don't know if I'd choose as a fashion statement, but I approve of its functionality. Okay, and I'm just hoping I won't be photographed. All right.
Well, it's good to hear from you again, and we have a good connection, so maybe we'll be able to bring you on another time.
Well, I'm very proud of myself for dialing all those numbers and getting through the technology. And it's a pleasure to be back on the air at KHOI, even if I'm not in the studio. And we look
great to hear your voice, Paul. Well, be careful this weekend.
Yeah, happy to hear from you again, and you've done a good job on the hog confinement meeting thing. You covered that well, both of you, and I too am concerned with that, because out here on my farm, my crib, my barn, all our buildings out here are obsolete and replaced by the more industrial farming. And matter of fact, very few farmers in this area have livestock anymore. You know, mostly grain farming. So progress and problems that come with progress, and sometimes questioning whether progress is progress.
Are you going to get some new livestock out there? Keep you company?
No, all I've got now, and it's haunted out here. We used to have horses, pigs, sheep, everything. Now all I've got is Sid, and he is so politically active. I don't know what to do with him. I let him come in and watch the History Channel. Well, the next day there was a little sign on the lawn that said "Free the Rosenbergs." You know. Well, you know, he has a lot of passionate feelings, but not much ability with context. So I have to watch Sid. He's just a real activist. But you have to love him. He's kind of crotchety and critical, but we get along, you know.
Well, that's good.
Good to have you with us again, Paul.
Yes, well, good to see you, Susan, on the phone anyway, and a very good show today. I am interested in hearing what happened at Gilbert, too, even though they are our arch rival, you know. So,
well, it sounds like
Thank you, Susan.
You had a good graduation, too.
Yes, well, we're going to, graduation continues, and some of the graduation parties will be in July for these individual kids, you know. So it's trailing off forever. The class of 2020 is taking about 100 bows here.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts for today, Susan Franzen and Gina McAndrews. Other voices you heard were Kim Stevens, Brenda Brink, Vic Vanderpool, and Paul Wearson.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at 7 p.m. At noon, the Ames Public Library will present a reading radio, a special children's program to brighten your day in the time of COVID-19. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories, as well as the graduation.
Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Pomp and Circumstance and I Love My Country, a music video by Florida Georgia Line.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just hit the yellow Donate Become a Member button. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening. See you again on the radio.